A good way to make an analogy of where does free energy come from? Well, free energy is reactance. And reactance is the reactive power that gets provoked to erupt from out of the materials of the construction of the circuit in question. All of the materials are a potential for the release of reactive power. The copper of the copper wire, the plastic insulating that copper wire, the dielectric material, whatever it might be, let's say it's plastic sandwiched in between two plates of each capacitor, whatever the materials are, all of them are a potential source of reactive power. And the secret is of free energy is to not put so much attention on the source of energy coming from outside the circuit so much as the energy that we wish to provoke to erupt from out of the materials of construction of the circuit itself. And we do this by using a catalyst or a stimulus of energy coming from outside the circuit in which the voltage applied to the circuit from outside the circuit is kept to a very low level, so low that there's no way that we can get the manifestation of current to come across that circuit because the various impedances of the circuit, namely the resistive impedances or the reactive impedances, are too much and they overwhelm the voltage coming from outside the circuit. But that's okay because we're not trying to get the voltage drop phenomenon of current to cascade down the length or across the circuit. All we're trying to do is stimulate it. And the voltage that we use is no more than the level of voltage that is prevalent in the environment, namely 1 microvolt, which is a part per millionth of a volt. 1 part per million, 1/1,000,000 times a volt. And what's more significant is using that to carry, as a carrier, to carry the frequency that we're going to input into this. And I find that sine waves work best. And I don't know if digital generated sine waves will work as a substitute for rotary generated sine waves. They may not, but it has to be a sine wave coming in from outside. Or you can have a capacitor and a coil set up somewhere in the circuit and you pre-charge the capacitor with 1 microvolt and thus create an oscillation between the coil and the capacitor, and that oscillation being a sine wave will also be adequate to initiate the eruption of reactive power to come out of that circuit. But it's literally, now here's the way I like to look at it. E equals MC squared, you know, famous equation, but it only pertains to the power inside the nucleus of an atom. And that's fine if you're a physicist designing an atom bomb, but it does not pertain to electrical engineering. What pertains to electrical engineering, the energy in the materials of construction, is located in the valence shell, the valence electron shells of the atom, which is not a whole lot of energy, you have to admit, and certainly not a whole lot of mass, if you're going to use E equals MC squared to try to figure out how much energy is there. Yet it's there, there's some mass, and yet that's the energy that we're going to be liberating. Now, there are several shells of electrons surrounding the atom, most of which are saturated. The shell, each layer of the shell is saturated. And so that's not a valence shell. A valence shell are the outer shells that are not saturated with electrons. And when it's not saturated, the atom is capable, let's say it's a copper atom, is capable of linking arms, so to speak, with the neighboring arms of the neighboring copper atoms. So if you imagine, if you will, a circle of people standing facing the center of the circle, and they put their hands on their hips, and so it creates a bend in their elbow, and they do it in such a way that they hook their arm around their neighbor's elbow. So two adjacent people, their elbows, the crook of their elbow, the inside of their elbow, is hooked, linked with the next person. So you get a chain link of people whose elbows, whose arms at their elbows are linked with the arms at the elbow of their neighboring person standing to their left or to the right. Well, it gets even better with smelt iron, copper ore, and turn it into copper metal, and you turn it into a copper wire. It gets even better, because now all the arms of the valence shells of each copper atom are linked to each other. Even though they're not all together in one mess, you know, they're linked, you know, some of them in parallel, some of them in series, to create the length of transmission copper wire. Yet, because of the nature of the valence shell linking up, each copper atom has access to all of the electrons of the valence shells of all the other copper atoms that are united, bonded together as one conductive strand of copper wire. That's a tremendous amount of energy accessible to each and every copper atom, once it all adds up. The more copper you've got, the more potential energy you have in that copper wire. And if you roll it on itself to create a coil, you have even more energy than before, because now you have inductive reactance increased over what the inductivity was, the inductance was, when the wire was straight. So there are all these tricks of the trade, geometry of the coil, of the strand of wire coiled up into a coil, all these tricks of the trade that help to enhance the potentiality of reactive power erupting from out of the materials of construction of your circuit. Now, you only need two components to create free energy. You need capacitance and you need inductance. And then you need an input or of frequency, of a sine wave frequency, or else it erupts from within the circuit, as I said before, either way. So now that's your third component having to do with time. You've got frequency, time in the form of frequency, and then you've got a waveform in the form of a sine wave, and you've got a capacitance and you've got inductance. Now you can enhance this, and you also your input of frequency has to be extremely low voltage, not too low, but not the amount that we always think. You know, you calculate how much energy your load is going to require, and then so you give that much voltage to the input of your circuit. No, that's way too much. That'll suppress the eruption of reactive power coming out of the materials of construction of your circuit. So we don't want to suppress that. That would be the wrong thing to do. So we give the same amount of voltage that our environment provides, 1 microvolt, 1/1000000th part of a volt, and that's the correct amount of voltage in most cases. Sometimes you can get... Now, aside from all those minimums, now we can add things to enhance the outcome, because maybe it'll take 10, 20, 30,000 seconds of time, which is several weeks, I would imagine, to build up an appreciable amount of energy if you fashioned your circuit correctly. So now we have to add enhancements, possibly spark gaps, possibly diodes, possibly maybe raise the input voltage of the sine wave frequency to maybe 1 millivolt, 1,000 times more than 1 microvolt, but still keep it less than 1 volt. We don't want to go beyond 3 volts. That seems to be the safe maximum. Maybe you can get away with 10 volts as the ultimate maximum, but you wouldn't want to go beyond that. I think I've gone as high as 20, and then it just keels over. But basically, optimum is somewhere in the vicinity of 1 microvolt, give or take 1,000 factor. You know, like 1 millivolt, what's 1,000 times less than 1 micro is 1 nanovolt. You know, somewhere around 1 microvolt. Give or take. But you can add enhancements to accelerate the buildup of reactive power. Now, reactive power is lossless, which means thermodynamics does not apply. You cannot dissipate reactive power unless it meets up with various methodologies for converting reactive power into real power, such as resistance. So the resistance of your coil or your line, your transmission copper wire, that's going to convert some of that reactive power into real power at a certain rate, and it's going to heat up the wire, and maybe it'll light up an incandescent light bulb, but that's the only way the reactive power is going to leave the system. One of three ways that I know of is through resistance. A full rectification full diode bridge will also do it. And matching, having a bifilar wound coil in which it's counterwound, you know, with each of the two windings are wound in opposite directions relative to each other. That's another way to convert reactive power into real power. But otherwise, you're going to get a buildup of reactive power that's just going to keep building up and building up. And even with the release of reactive power by way of its conversion into real power, you may still get a buildup of reactive power. It all depends how you construct the circuit. And that buildup is going to amount to infinity within an infinite length of time. In other words, given enough time, it'll just keep rising to such a point that it'll destroy the circuit. And so you want to regulate the buildup somehow, but you're going to get a buildup because you will have succeeded, hopefully, in separating the current phase of electricity from the voltage phase by 180 degrees separation of angular separation. That's one half cycle of separation. So technically, it's 0 watts because the current and the voltage cancel each other out, provided they're of equal amplitude. But in terms of reactance, you've got a tremendous amount of power in there. Even though the real power wattage is zero, the reactive power potential is, you know, it keeps building up to humongous degrees. Now, that's essentially how to create free energy. And there are mechanical and chemical analogs, such as the cold heat from Canada device that was suppressed by Eisenhower. I thought it was the military-industrial complex because he complained about that during his farewell speech. But according to William Doyle Jr., it was Exxon, you know, it was an oil company who put a stop to it. So regardless of who the bigwig was, Eisenhower, acting as president, had to take dictation from somebody else. He was not the commander-in-chief, apparently, of our country. He couldn't be like Kennedy and get assassinated for standing in the way of corporate interests. And apparently, that may be one of the multiple reasons why JFK was killed, because he was about to meet with the people who were fashioning that invention in Canada. He was killed like the month before. So it's very interesting politics. Not so interesting for Kennedy, who's no longer with us, but who died young, quite violently, or suddenly, so maybe he didn't suffer. But anyway, that's the secret to free energy, is to recognize it as reactive power. And reactive power has been around, recognized as such, at least as long as Oliver Heaviside. You know, I guess Maxwell knew about it as well, but he didn't deal with real-life situations. He just dealt with mathematics, which is fine and dandy. Oliver Heaviside actually dealt with a real-world problem of, you know, the telegraph transmission line, the transatlantic telegraph problem of the 1880s. So that was the first time reactive power came into historical use, you know, or as an aspect of electricity, because essentially, if you break electricity down into its constituent ingredients, you're basically dealing with potentialities, all of which are reactant potentialities. Time, magnetomotive force, which manifests as current or magnetism, and the electromotive force, which we know of as voltage. Now, personally, I don't even think current exists, or magnetism for that matter. It's a byproduct of voltage and time and resistance. But that's my way of looking at Ohm's law, namely voltage squared divided by resistance within a framework of time, assuming, you know, it's assumed to be within a framework of time, gives us wattage or power. That's my way of looking at Ohm's law, and it's I think, more honest appraisal of the situation. It may not be convenient. You know, if you want to deal with current, dealing with current in terms of voltage divided by resistance, you know, separated out from voltage squared divided by resistance, you know, it may be a little inconvenient. So we substitute voltage divided by resistance with a singular symbol and call it current. Be that as it may, however you want to do it, however you want to be honest or dishonest for the convenience sake, it really doesn't matter because it comes mathematically, it comes out to be the same equivalency, and it, you know, and the end result is the same, just as long as you understand that current may be a fiction of convenience. Anywho, and yeah, current, I think, you know, the best analogy for current and matter and gravity is to look at the computer core memory dating between the years of 1955 and 1975, in which we have a warp and a weave of copper wire, insulated copper wire, very, very thin, and at each intersection of each pair of vertical and horizontally oriented strands of copper wire, we have a ferrite ring, a very tiny, really, you got to use a magnifying glass or a microscope to see it, a ring, a ferrite ring surrounding the intersection of each pair of crisscrossing wires. And that was computer memory. It's a great idea. It's based on magnetic remnants, which the experiment which validates that is the PMH experiment that Edward Leedskalnin popularized. He did not invent it, but he did popularize it. It's called Perpetual Motion Holder, PMH for short, and it exhibits magnetic remnants, namely the footprint that the application of voltage leaves behind in a magnetizable substance that is not magnetism per se, but you can get a flash of magnetism when you put the footprint in, and another flash when it gets released due to changes applied to that magnetizable iron or whatever magnetizable, ferromagnetizable substance in question that's storing that footprint, that magnetic memory. Anywho, so I think I've said enough.